when you think about a virus, for example, if a virus comes in, the mitochondria, because it was its own bacteria, it has its own defense system. It has its own system of like sensing what's happening around it. The mitochondria says, alert, alert, alert. You know, we've got an intruder. So it will wall off the cell membrane, both of the cell itself and the mitochondria, and try to contain the threat. So that's CDR, cell danger response one, is that defense mechanism where the mitochondria look more like a meatball.
Dr. Lisa Coach, thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I always get inspired when I hear like radical healing stories. I don't know what it is. Maybe because I was sick back in the day, and I think I really relied on listening to people that have healed and then learning how they did it. And then I would just like steal whatever gem I could that I thought might help me. And the thing that stood out when you reached out to me was that you were a two-time survivor. I think it was leukemia and heart failure. And that sounds...
Yeah, it's almost more than two. So
okay. Well, that sounded pretty big.
It's pretty big. And I, you know, what's different about me than a lot of practitioners is I'm thankful every day that my journey started at 15, and it was a really hard time. But what happened, because I got sick so young, is that I, by the time I went to medical school, I was going to find out why I was sick, and I never got indoctrinated. So I was old enough when I was diagnosed to know something was wrong, that they couldn't give me an answer as to why I got sick. And I was young enough that I wasn't programmed into the system. So it was a pretty unique experience then. I would not say it was enjoyable, because I felt fine. I went for a camp physical and they said my blood was off and they thought it was an error and did it again. And that was off to the races. So I had chemo for 3 years. Luckily, it was a very treatable form of leukemia that I was diagnosed with. But I had to go through pretty aggressive chemo for 3 years. And then it relapsed when I was in my junior year of college. I went for my first ever GYN appointment, and they found a mass in my ovary, and it was hidden leukemic cells. So right when all my hair had grown back, right when I was like enjoying college, about to go to my junior year, it was, and we're going to do this again. I woke up from the anesthesia and they said that the mass that they had felt was the leukemia, which is rare that it hides out like that, but it happens. So my parents at the time, you know, freaked out. They took me to the best hospital for relapsed leukemia in the country, which was in New York, and started chemo again. And about a month or two into that therapy, of course, after losing all my hair again, which is the hardest thing for anybody, but especially a teenage girl, I went into extreme heart failure from chemo, the chemo-induced heart failure.
Oh, is that common, that chemo induces that?
It's not uncommon. I mean, there's a guy I just met who is a cardiologist that was actually hired here locally for the purpose of chemo-induced heart failure. So if that tells you it's not uncommon, you know, I think they have these thresholds where they know to stay under based on your weight. They're not supposed to overdo the chemo beyond that point. And they were still technically under it, I guess, with me, but, you know, you never know.
So what drives that? Is it just the overall like stress of having chemo?
It's the drug itself. So it's a specific drug called adriamycin that they know that particular one is cardiotoxic. Like, it's just dangerous to the heart. It works on the against the mitochondria, and it damages the heart muscle. So it's heart failure is what it's called, which can happen from postpartum to some women. It can happen, you know, we saw it with myocarditis after COVID shots. Like, it's a thing that happens for different reasons, but this is a very specific one that can happen. And for me, what was interesting is my uncle at that time was a podiatrist, and he started sending me supplements. So it was my first exposure. They weren't a thing back then, but I guess he looked it up. He researched it, I don't know. But he started shipping CoQ10 and carnitine, and it was on auto ship. And my parents were not opposed to integrated. They just didn't understand it. They just had like a dying kid. They're not going to argue. And I started taking this stuff and I got better. So it's like, I don't know if it was just because my heart was young. I don't know if it was because I was also on some meds. You know, I was doing both.
So
which
CoQ10,
has been my whole story the whole time, is being a bridge.
Gotcha. So CoQ10 and carnitine, those both affect carnitine. Like energy metabolism.
Correct. And they help the heart pump and the mitochondria work more efficiently.
So the drug that you take for chemo, the reason it works for the cancer is that it is toxic and toxic to the mitochondria. I assume that's to stop the cell growth within the...
And that's the problem with chemo in general, right? It's like it's not overly selective for the cancer cells. So they're working on constantly finding new things that can target just the cancer cell. But that's why people lose their hair, too, because it's like fast growing, high mitochondrial load is what can be more.
Is that because it's like too metabolically expensive for the body to keep it up and doesn't feel like it's necessary?
Well, that and the fact that the cancer, so they want to target the rapidly.
And I mean the hair loss. Is that because your mitochondria are like, well, this isn't important, so we won't divert resources there?
I understand what you're asking. Yes, and it's the drug itself is targeted towards the rapidly reproducing mitochondria.
Gotcha.
So it's both. You know, I think it's...
Okay. So... The mitochondria in the hair is rapidly producing because hair grows faster than other stuff. Did you ever, Lisa, gain any insight to like what might have been underlying to drive cancer at a... I mean, you're supposed to be so like healthy and vibrant at 15 years old.
Right. I mean, in hindsight, I think most things, there's always a spiritual purpose. And what's really interesting is that at 15, even at 15, I had this weird innate knowing that I was going to be okay, number one, and that there was a purpose. And so I just trusted beyond all logic, right, that there was a reason and I had no idea what it was. And I mean, I had great friends that were supportive. I wore a wig, so I could kind of fit in, which that was helpful, but it's as I, you know, my point was, okay, why did I get sick? Exactly like you said, like, what is the reason that a 15-year-old who's vibrant and healthy and I felt generally good and exercised and did whatever, I didn't necessarily eat, I ate the same as my friends, like, what's going on here? And we didn't have that cancer in the family per se. So when I would ask the doctors, they would say, we don't know. And then it became, well, if nobody has any clue, I'm going to go find out myself. And because I was fascinated with the body anyway, and I was, you know, smart in science, and my dad's a mathematician. He was like a world renowned. He just retired from Vanderbilt, but like, we've always been sciencey math people. And so I got into medical school. Somehow I ended up, and when I look back at this, like my second semester of my junior year of college, the chemo protocol overlapped with school starting. I was in school in Atlanta, and the overlap was about 3 weeks. So I was going to miss 3 weeks of school. And the other option was to stay in New York, and I became a visiting student at Columbia. So I chose that just because I could stay with the people that were already doing my chemo. And this next protocol was like a year and a half. And I literally would get, because my parents had been there taking turns with me when I was going through the more aggressive chemo at the beginning. And then I went to, when they were able to finally go back home, I was actually at a dorm at Columbia. I would get in a cab on my chemo days, go by myself to Sloan Kettering. I knew the nurse. I'd get my chemo on my own, go back to my dorm. Like, this is like crazy that I did this. You look back now, because even the procedures, there was a time where I'd have a bone marrow biopsy or a spinal tap every 6 weeks. They would alternate, which are invasive procedures that now they put people to sleep for. I was awake as a 20-year-old kid or 16, you know, whatever time it was. So somehow I was able to go and still graduate college on time and then get into a really great medical school, which was at where I went to undergrad at Emory. And so in medical school, it was the same thing. I would watch patients would come in. They'd have different complaints. They'd get protocols. They'd get imaging. And they'd get put on a plan. And it didn't answer their why either. So then I was like, okay, Houston, we've got a problem. Like, we have no idea what this miraculous body is doing. Like, the medicine can handle certain acute things, but nobody really understands the why. Right. And so that became my passion, you know, I chose internal medicine because it was the only broad option at the time for trying to understand the why behind people's diseases. And I was fascinated with the heart just because I'd had my exposure with cardiac stuff. It turned out the group at the university I was at for my residency left the practice to open their own private practice. So they brought me along because I finished my residency at the same time. So I was like, I just want to prevent disease. I don't want to treat end stage stuff. Like, I don't want people to get sick. And so I started studying nutrition and integrative medicine. And that's how I kind of began. I dipped my toe in functional. And then eventually I found the anti-aging regenerative medicine fellowship, which was intense. I also made my own residency. Like when I went with these cardiologists, I took a much lower paying job for the opportunity to learn prevention. So I studied vascular and obesity and nutrition and like things that we didn't get in med school. And then I brought in a team of healers to work with gastric bypass patients because that was the obesity, you know, that if I can intervene there, I can fix a lot of issues. Now that procedure is barbaric, but I would watch people go through the procedure and their hormones would all get messed up. So then the breadcrumbs have led me, you know, in my career along with my body. Because again, my body, I say, it wasn't just those initial things. Then I had to deal with lifelong effects of the chemo, which is, you know, some autoimmune things. I'm still dealing with it. Mitochondrial, my heart. My heart acted up with my pregnancy. Nobody knew if I could get pregnant because they had to take my ovary out. I had more chemo. You know, they really didn't know if I could get pregnant. And I did actually on the first try with my daughter, which was amazing. And she just decided she wants to go to medical school and come join me, which is really exciting.
That's cool.
Yeah. But I wanted more than one kid. And after I had her, I crashed again. So this is actually was another turning point where I was doing a lot of integrative things, but my autoimmune, I got Hashimoto's and psoriasis and sinus problems and like you name it. And I went back to regular doctors and had some crazy experiences, like one where I couldn't open my eyes. They were hurting so bad. One where I think the eye surgeon, he was a thyroid specialist, had a button under his desk because I went there with all these questions and all he did was want to operate on me and told me I had thyroid eye and I needed surgery. And when I refused to schedule the surgery, it was really wild. He came running out of the room. So I think there must have had a button. He was in a different room to say, we already talked about this. Why aren't you scheduling your procedure? And I was like, I'm just going to think about it. And literally was so pushy that I was crying in my car, not for myself. I was like mad for patients because I was like, I'm strong enough and I understand that this is bullshit. I'm going to figure it out. But what about all the people who don't understand this, right? And so meanwhile, I'm sitting there with my very dry eyes and knowing again that surgery is not what I need. And I got a letter firing me from his practice about a month later for non-compliant.
Most of us are trying to get healthier, but we're honestly guessing which habits actually matter for our bodies. We're buying supplements, following wellness trends, doing the workouts, and hoping something sticks. What I love about True Diagnostic is that it takes the guesswork out. They test your biological age and key health markers and then give you a clear, personalized 90-day plan based on what your body actually needs. I recently took the test myself for the second time, and what stood out most to me was how incredibly convenient it was. The kit arrived at my door, The finger prick was quick and simple, and I just dropped it back in the prepaid envelope. No appointments, no labs, no disruption to my routine. Now I'm waiting for my results over the next couple weeks, and I'm genuinely excited to see what's happening beneath the surface, especially around metabolism, nutrient status, and how my lifestyle is impacting longevity. True Diagnostic offers the True Age test, which compares your biological age to your chronological age and shows how fast you're aging, plus the health of 11 organ systems. They also offer True Health, which looks at over 105 biomarkers to understand your health right now. Or you can do the combo kit, which gives you both, and honestly, that's the best value. The process is simple. Order online, test at home, get digital results, and focus on just 3 actions for 90 days. You can do it once or use their quarterly subscription to track real progress over time. Right now, my listeners can get 20% off at truediagnostic.com using code MINDFUL20 at checkout. That's truediagnostic.com and use code MINDFUL20 for 20% off today. Choose True Age, True Health, or the Combo Kit as a one-time purchase or subscription. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you've probably heard me talk about how important it is to regulate your nervous system. This goes for healing, for focus, for just overall emotional well-being. But the reality is that even if we know the tools to help do this, whether it's breathing or meditation or just slowing down, it can still be really hard to stay regulated throughout a busy day. That's one reason I've really been interested in the Apollo wearable by Apollo Neuro. Sarah and I both use this device regularly and have found it very beneficial. It's a small wearable device that uses gentle vibrations, and they're designed to signal safety to your nervous system. What's fascinating is that those signals can help your body shift out of a stress state and into a calmer, more regulated state. What I like about it, most of all, is that even though it can work great alongside practices like meditation or breath work, the real value is that you can wear it throughout your day, even while you're at work, and just let it work its magic on your nervous system. The other standout use that I rely on is wearing it to bed. Not only does it help me fall asleep fast, but I often wake up around 3 a.m. and I can just tap the button on it and it will help lull me back to sleep quickly. If you want to learn more, check out the podcast episode with the founder, David Rabin, and you could explore more about the technology itself. But if you're someone that struggles with anxiety or feeling wired or overwhelmed, or you're simply looking for more nervous system support in daily life, it might be something worth exploring. You can learn more about the Apollo wearable and how it works and save $99 on a new device at apolloneuro.com/mindful or click the link in the show notes. I promise you won't regret this investment. I truly believe it's the best bang for the buck in the wellness tech space. Wow.
Then soon after that, I met my naturopath who does muscle testing, which is a very Eastern medicine approach. And he's been doing it for 40 years. He's like the goat of muscle testing. And my friend told me about him, and I went in to see him, and I'd gone to all these traditional people, you know, endocrine for my sinus. I've gone to ENT for my sinus. I'd have surgery on that. I went to the eye guy, the thyroid. And so when I finally went to this guy doing muscle, they all told me I was fine. Like, your labs look fine, all the typical stuff. And I took, because I was taking thyroid and my numbers were better. This guy, I go to see him. He pulls on my arm. And after we're done, I sit down and he looks at me and goes, "How are you functioning?" And I just, again, started crying because he's like, "You're one of the worst people I've tested in a very long time." And I'm like, "That's how I feel." And so he put me on a bunch of supplements and I started feeling better. So I had to go answer to my tax attorney husband and my mathematician dad that not only am I going to sell vitamins in my office, which they were adamantly opposed to at the time, but I'm going to be working with this guy who pulls on your arm.
You were already at a doctor at the time that you're seeing at this point. So you're like a doctor going to see someone that does muscle testing.
Correct. Gotcha. Because I was already in my practice for 10 years. Okay. So I was already doing integrative stuff. Like, I was learning about vitamins. I was learning about functional medicine. And I was still like, I mean, I had acute issues after my pregnancy. So that's why I say I keep getting led by different journeys.
So do you think, Lisa, that if you didn't get sick when you were young? Would you have not have been a doctor? Would you have gone a different route?
I think I still would have been a doctor, but I wouldn't have had the knowledge of like not getting, and you know, my colleagues get indoctrinated so easily into the system because that's the point of the system. It's just like, here's how we do it, you know. I probably would have woken up a little later, I'll say.
Gotcha. So now you've put together, you're the founder of, is it Spectra Wellness Solutions?
Mm-hmm. So we have a clinic. So what happened with my practice over time is I was doing kind of the preventive side of cardiology and primary care. And I just, as I was having these issues happen to me, I was watching the patients that were not getting answers either. And I was doing more functional medicine. Sometimes I would send them to this guy doing the muscle testing in Clearwater. He was like 45 minutes away. Tougher cases. And they were coming back getting answers. And I would even not tell this naturopath that I was doing a stool kit, for example, to look at people's microbiome back when it wasn't a thing. And he would find the same thing with his muscle testing that I would find on this test.
Can you touch on muscle testing? I mean, I don't know if we've ever really talked about muscle testing on the podcast.
On the show.
Yeah. How would you describe what muscle testing is?
So how I would describe it is it's more an Eastern medicine thing. It's typically done by naturopaths and chiropractors. And it's where you use a muscle response typically in your arm. You can lay down or you can stand up and you're asking the innate energy field of the body, and then you can get a response. So it's really a neurological response. You could be Hulk or you could be an old lady because it's not a, like, it doesn't matter what your actual muscle mass is. It's a nerve reflex, kind of like if I tap on your knee and it kicks. So we can find, when this is done correctly, we can find a wealth of information that doesn't show up on labs and scans.
So the idea is basically you do a baseline where somebody pushes on this, like your arm, like mm-hmm. this extended lever where you don't have a lot of leverage so that someone could push down. And then you get like a judge of how your strength is. And then you either hold an item or mm-hmm. think of an item or something.
Or we'll touch acupuncture points.
Or somebody could touch part of your body. And then they retest, and if there's a significant, like noticeable change in your ability to hold your arm up, it's like a signal that the body isn't happy with that.
You got it. And it's like weirdly simple, you know, that's the part. And it's not really been able to be proven easily because if the practitioner is not of pure intent, like if the practitioner is just being a scam artist or selling vitamins or whatever, right? Which we know that exists.
And honestly, it could be hard to do. I've muscle tested people and it's hard to do everything the same way. It's you know, I'm sure if you practice a lot, you get better at it, but.
You're right. It's definitely an art because you have to have yourself just as a pure, more of a channel to just be connected to the human. So I've learned just because I've sat by the goat, but he's like, literally having somebody at that level of knowledge next to me, what happened? Because then he ended up joining my practice. So we've been working side by side for 14, 15 years at this point. But when I would bring up ideas like, I wonder if this person's converting their thyroid hormone. Like I'd come up and he would literally say, let's test it. Let's go make a vial of 5' deiodinase, which is the enzyme that converts T4 to T3 and makes your thyroid active, and then we can test. And so it was just fun. Like,
interesting.
Oh, I didn't
know.
Well,
that's a pretty specialized thing to test. You mentioned, circling back a little bit, you mentioned earlier that you were given thyroid, you were on thyroid, and this was a while ago. Was that T4 or T3 or some combo?
Initially, it was just Synthroid because I didn't know any better, you know. And then as I would learn, so through the years, I've been on lots of different things. But the desiccated, which is the, you know, armor derivatives, armor is kind of has fillers in it. And unfortunately, the FDA and or other big pharma has gone after the really good desiccateds and shut them down. Like sequentially, we've watched this. I've seen it with my patients. It's like Natrathroid. Thiza, to the point where something's a little off. So,
Armour Thyroid's still available, right?
You can still get it. You can get NP Thyroid, which is and Armour. Those are both still on the market. Plus, you can get T4, obviously, in a prescription, T3 in a prescription, and you can also go to a compounder and get them to put them together. So there's still options.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's a very – I'm like really skeptical of the pharmaceuticals, and I feel like the big exception is thyroid stuff.
Well,
I think it's very interesting.
I'll tell you what. The gland is super sensitive. There's a lot of toxins in our environment that resemble the thyroid tissue. So that's why you see a high incidence of autoimmune thyroid. I also think there's a big spiritual component. That's why we see it a lot more in women than men, because when you don't use your voice, which is right where the thyroid's at.
Touch on that. What do you mean?
So I think a lot of the physical issues that we see are connected to stuck trauma or patterns in our energy field. We're just starting to understand this. And again, you know, I'm always about 10 years ahead with my body leads me or random events, which I can tell you about an interesting one in a second. But to heal myself for the last, especially the last 10 years, I had about 8 years ago, I had another big cardiac event where my heart just kind of pooped out again, and it wasn't from pregnancy. I was able to have a second kid. That was a miracle. It was 8 years after my daughter, but he was delivered under emergency general cardiac anesthesia because my heart gave out at the end. So like I've dealt with my heart with events, but then 8 years ago, it just kind of happened out of, I was having a lot of stress. You know, I had this 5-year-old, a 13-year-old, practice that was going crazy, just lots of things happening in my life, and my heart gave out again. And at that point, they had to put a pacemaker in my chest, and my cardiologist and the cardiologist that set you up for heart transplant were fighting. The transplant doctor wanted me in the ICU on a transplant list. My cardiologist said, we can fix her with a pacer. So I got really lucky there, but the message that came in, because I said, I've always trusted my intuition, was like, I was asking the question, like, all I do is serve. I keep trying to stay ahead of this and help people. Like, why is this happening again? Like, what am I supposed to do next? And it was, you serve everybody but yourself. You know, that was what came in. So I have been on this healing journey for 8-9 years of reclaiming just my own voice and my own presence and not playing small. And this is an issue with men and women, but it's probably a little bit more of an issue with women. So doing that, searching for that spiritual reason for me, like for where in your path have you sacrificed or where in your path have you had trauma, and going back and just digging it a little deeper for that can really help patients heal, because it has for me.
Interesting. So you feel if somebody doesn't feel comfortable due to like some kind of emotional based belief system about themselves or whatever, something stemming from childhood trauma or whatever experience they had, if it leads them to not speak up, that the blockage, if you will, like is at that voice. So it's the gland that's at that physical location.
No, you're really smart. You're asking amazing questions. In my book that's coming out at the end of the year, I came up with what I call the three principles of truth. And it's like, how do you look at things? So the first one is something may be true, but it's blocked by a greater agenda or purpose. Like, so that, you know, we all know that. That's the big pharma. That's pandemic. There's like just a lot of stuff that potentially has been where it doesn't agree with our intuition, right? We'll just say. Number two is something may be true, but blocked by your own fears and beliefs and cultural conditioning, which is pretty common too. It's like, you know, we just agree, or we like men will do things because that's the role they think they're supposed to have. And like, they have to keep going, right? This is like a cultural conditioning, and they ignore their own intuition and needs. And then principle number three is what we're talking about, which is something may be true, but not yet proven. So I think that's where this lies. We just don't understand the energetic, spiritual, but quantum nature of our bodies. And there's some scientists now that are proving this. I don't know if you know who Joe Dispenza is, but
yeah, sure.
You know, Joe's work on regrowing organs. The scientist, his lead scientist and I are working together a fair amount with mitochondrial testing that's come out more recently, which is very exciting. And there's definitely an ability to pick up a lot of healing when you address thoughts and traumas and release things more deliberately from an energetic standpoint.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I've done, I guess, some studying and practice over the years around a lot around like the yoga traditions and philosophies. And, you know, one thing that stood out is like how the chakra system seems to link up with so much of like the way we view medical stuff now. But it's like, it's if you're not open and seeing those connections, like I have a sense that some of these ideas that you just referenced, they've known for a long time.
Yeah. So
it's like we have to relearn it through the lens that everybody's comfortable seeing the world now.
100%, you're nailing it. Like they found mummies with acupuncture markings from, you know, 2,000-3,000 years ago. It's like people have known about these energy systems. Other cultures have talked about chi and chakras and energy and worked on that in their hospitals even for years. We used to have, like way back in the 1900s, they would have solariums where they would take patients outside because they knew the sun was healing. And it's like now, I mean, everything's backwards and you're wondering why everybody's sick. It's like this disconnection from nature, disconnection from the sun, disconnection from, you know, circadian patterns and from our authenticity where we're forcing our tissues to act a certain way.
Yeah, I saw an image where I think it was like early 20th century, like very early. And there were these women kind of lining up to go in these little like box shaped rooms where it was like, it was almost like they were walking into a bathroom stall and they were like lined up, but they were just no ceiling. It was just a private space for them to lay out and get the sun where nobody could see because it was walled. And they're like shuffling in robes or bathing suits or something so that they could just lay in the sun. And that was treatment. That was like medically dished out treatment.
Exactly. And it's like it's free and it's right there. And instead, we're all in fluorescent lights and, you know, living this crazy life that's disconnected. I love all your plants. I'm the same way. I've got plants everywhere, too, because we're meant to be connected to living things. Right. Like, so if we can, and if you look at the mitochondria, this is actually a really cool thing. So about a while ago, my daughter was in eighth grade and she wanted me to quiz her on her homework, she had a test. And so I'm always like, please don't be history. Please don't be history. And so she said, no, it's science. It's the mitochondria. So I'm like, oh my God, yes, I need to review this. Like I'm interested in this. So she hands me this packet to quiz her and I opened it up and the first like 10 pages are about a leaf. It's not about a human. And I'm like, Jordan, you said this was the mitochondria. And she looked at me and goes, Mom, the chloroplast and the mitochondria are the same. What is wrong with you? And I was like, so she had a picture and they literally look the same. So this is chloroplast is how the plant makes energy. Mitochondria, how the human does. And they look weirdly similar. So like, if you guys are interested, go pull up an image because it's wild. So the same things that help plants, grounding, so like healthy earth and putting your feet in the earth, the sun, like speaking nicely, when we speak nicely to the plants, they flourish. I had a plant guy, we've got these beautiful plants throughout the office, but I had a plant guy tell me he had these lawyers in very similar locations in a law firm with the plant. And one was like screaming at people all day and the other was whatever they were doing. And that plant was like constantly dead in the screamer's room and it was alive in the other. Like, this is the plant guy telling me this. So this is pretty cool.
Yeah, there's been some interesting studies around plants. I mean, I think I was reading one where they just taped a piece of paper on the plant pot that had like I think it was maybe the word love and one was hate or something. Like, just, I don't know if it's the energy that's infused as the moment somebody's writing it or if it's like the words themselves carry weight in the plants.
Wow.
I don't know, but plants are interesting. I mean, I've noticed relationships I feel like I've built with plants around my property or in my house. And I mean, I don't know what it is, but there's something there. There's
there something is. There.
And it's interesting you say that the chloroplasts are the same. Like, I've heard, I don't know if this is true. I mean, it's hard to know what's really true, but
correct.
I've heard that they think mitochondria have originally were like bacteria, essentially, that organize themselves to, I don't know, make a bigger thing or something. But if, you know, hearing that you say that the chloroplasts in the plant are the same as the mitochondria in our cells, like, I wonder if they're, like, maybe they both came from the same place. You know, maybe they're just...
Yeah, potentially. I mean,
they go back and they were all bacteria and they split off at some point to plants.
Yeah,
and
the plant obviously is making oxygen, whereas we're using it. So that's the difference.
Right.
But what we've been able to discover is that the mitochondria was its own bacteria. It has its own DNA. So it has its own defense system, which is really, really cool. And then at some point, a lump of cells decided to hijack it to become our fuel source. And that's like how humans started to evolve.
Do we know that for sure? Do we know that it's that way and not
the
mitochondria built an organism around it? Or
as sure as we can, like I said, principle number three. I mean,
right.
For now,
right.
This is my point. I see all these influencers and I see like people talking and then they get on their soapbox. And it's like when something changes, they don't want to change their mind because they've built themselves around this. And it's like, that's not the point of science, right? It's constantly evolving. So the answer is, as far as we know right now, yes. And we have, it's pretty interesting because something we've discovered even just since COVID that I'm really fascinated with right now is called the cell danger response. I don't know if you've heard of that.
I have. Yeah, I think I heard it in... Dr. Neil Nathan's book about mold.
Sensitive Patient's Guide to Healing. Yep. His book is great. So
go ahead. Explain it. Cell danger response.
So the easiest way I explain to my patients is that it's a healthy response to stress. So when you think about a virus, for example, if a virus comes in, the mitochondria, because it was its own bacteria, it has its own defense system. It has its own system of like sensing what's happening around it. The mitochondria says, alert, alert, alert. You know, we've got an intruder. So it will wall off the cell membrane, both of the cell itself and the mitochondria, and try to contain the threat. So that's CDR, cell danger response one. Is that defense mechanism where the mitochondria look more like a meatball. That's what they call it. Like it literally, we think a mitochondria is supposed to be like a bean.
They wall off, you say?
It's dynamic.
So the mitochondria itself, or it walls off the cell membrane?
Mostly the cell, but also it will impact the membrane of the mitochondria. So the mitochondria itself.
So there's a signal. There's some communication from the mitochondria.
Yes.
To the cell that off the cell membrane.
Yes. And then the cell membrane becomes impermeable because it's like, it's basically, think of a country, it shuts its borders down and it's going to stop talking to the neighbors. Like that's what happens when the threat is there. So that's CDR1. But then what happens is it's supposed to move through CDR2 and CDR3. Well, CDR2 is, hey guys, come in and clean this mess up. Whether it's, you know, a virus, mold, toxins, the body doesn't really know. That's the hard part. Like it gets tripped up. You got in a fight with your partner or you a fight with your kid or you're in a chemtrail or you are exposed to mold or you got exposed to a virus. It doesn't know the difference. So then it's supposed to move into CDR2 where it mops everything up, and CDR3 is return to normal function. And what's really cool, if you want to pull electron microscopy on mitochondria, this blew me away, is that they don't look like a bean. They're actually actively dynamic. So sometimes they're meatballs and sometimes they're spaghetti. That was the analogy I read.
Well,
so
they merge and split,
yeah,
right?
They hold. So when they're spaghetti and they're healthy, they're holding hands. They're sharing resources. And so for me, and this is a lot of what my book's about too, it's like that mirrors humans. When we're living in a way that makes sense, we're connected. You know, we're sharing. We get each other. We're supportive. So, and the problem that's happening with the cell danger response is to move through these three phases, you need the safety signal. You need the all clear. Like, hey guys, we're clear. Move back to original operations. But you don't get that because your nervous system is shot.
I thought part of the cell danger response was like the signaling out, like the cell sounding an alarm that winds up spreading from cell to cell. I don't know if that's originating from the mitochondria or some other aspect of the cell.
It's actually the ATP. It's the actual energy molecule ATP. Instead of being used for energy, it starts spilling into the cytoplasm, which it's not supposed to be there. So then it acts as a stress signal.
Hmm. So the cytoplasm is like the goo outside of the mitochondria, this like the liquid whatever.
And it'll go extracellularly too. So it'll start talking to other cells like, hey, there's a mess over here.
Gotcha.
And then they close off.
And it's signaling, which creates like an immunological reaction, like cytokines being sent around.
I think it's both. And I also think we don't fully understand this yet. But it's definitely creating more cells that are walled off.
So part of this is when this happens, we're making less energy. I would assume, or at least we're.
No, you're right.
We're making less energy for the things that are driving like our long-term health.
Yeah, listen, you are asking the best questions. So the way I describe it when I speak about this is that you can view your body as a computer. So the first line is your nervous system is acting like a motherboard, sensing the environment. And that's kind of external. But then the internal sensor is the mitochondria. It's like the canary in the coal mine.
If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you've probably heard me talk about how important it is to regulate your nervous system. This goes for healing, for focus, for just overall emotional well-being. But the reality is that even if we know the tools to help do this, whether it's breathing or meditation or just slowing down, it can still be really hard to stay regulated throughout a busy day. That's one reason I've really been interested in the Apollo wearable by Apollo Neuro. Sarah and I both use this device regularly and have found it very beneficial. It's a small wearable device that uses gentle vibrations, and they're designed to signal safety to your nervous system. What's fascinating is that those signals can help your body shift out of a stress state and into a calmer, more regulated state. What I like about it most of all is that even though it can work great alongside practices like meditation or breath work, the real value is that you can wear it throughout your day, even while you're at work, and just let it work its magic on your nervous system. The other standout use that I rely on is wearing it to bed. Not only does it help me fall asleep fast, but I often wake up around 3 a.m. and I can just tap the button on it and it will help lull me back to sleep quickly. If you want to learn more, check out the podcast episode with the founder, David Rabin, and you could explore more about the technology itself. But if you're someone that struggles with anxiety or feeling wired or overwhelmed, or you're simply looking for more nervous system support in daily life, it might be something worth exploring. You can learn more about the Apollo wearable and how it works and save $99 on a new device at apolloneuro.com/mindful or click the link in the show notes. I promise you won't regret this investment. I truly believe it's the best bang for the buck in the wellness tech space. Today's episode is supported by one of our affiliate partners, Sunlight and Saunas, and I want to share about them in a very real and personal way. Of all the health and wellness tools I've invested in over the years, whether it be the education, the movement practices, and just the myriad of modalities, our Sunlight and Sauna has honestly been the single greatest overall investment I've made for my well-being. Not because it fixes everything, but because of how consistently it supports my nervous system and my mood. I know many users of infrared saunas use it for the great cardiovascular benefits or the detoxification, which are obviously important, but for me personally, it's about how I feel. Using the sauna almost guarantees that I move through my day feeling more grounded, more regulated, and just more emotionally steady. Their full-spectrum infrared technology works at lower temperatures, which makes the experience feel more supportive rather than depleting. It's not about pushing through intense heat. It's about allowing the body to soften, to release, and to reset. For me, it's become a non-negotiable. It's an anchor in my self-care, a space to slow down, to breathe, and let my body do what it already knows how to do when it feels safe and supported. If you're someone who carries a lot, who tends to live in your head, or who's working to support your nervous system more intentionally, this is a tool that truly complements any other health-minded lifestyle habit, whether it's meditation, exercise, you name it. You can learn more about Sunlighten and explore their sauna options at sunlighten.com/mindful. They are running some of their biggest specials right now, so check them out and see which sauna is best for you. I assure you, it's an investment you won't regret.
And what happens is when it's sensing all that stuff, you've got backup systems. So whether it's your adrenal and cortisol response that is almost like surge protector where it'll pump out cortisol and then eventually it'll poop out, or it deprioritizes, which is exactly what you just said, hormones, because it's like we don't need to procreate and we don't need to do all this stuff. We're in alert right now. So the hormone production will go down. That's why we're seeing like men with testosterone of 100 in their 20s.
Really? That low?
Yeah. That's it's scary. And then you'll see the thyroid, because it's the same thing. The thyroid's kind of like downshifting because it's got to conserve energy. So, and the mitochondria itself is in that walled off spot where it's not actively producing. So it's kind of like a stall, like you're just standing still, and then you, like, that needs to be fixed.
Do you feel like the thyroid is kind of really working upstream, putting aside the like spiritual side of things that might be driving someone to not show up their best or whatever, or have some physical manifestation? Like, I feel like a lot of like metabolism is kind of, from what I understand, governing everything essentially.
I think it's because of this.
And we work so much downstream in these little like myopic lenses of all these systems and categories when like even like you mentioned testosterone, I mean, you need thyroid to make testosterone. You need like an abundance. You need a signal that it's safe and okay to do things that you want to do to help procreate the species or whatever. And not necessarily just to live through the day, but like live through the decade or whatever. And when there's a problem, whatever that stress is, whether it is emotional or physical, car accident or mental anguish or virus or bacteria or never touching the ground or never getting enough sleep or toxin, like whatever it is, it's like the thyroid, that metabolism is like the gas pedal. And it's like your body doesn't want to push the gas pedal when it's not a good time to run the machinery.
100%. So you, I mean, you're 100% getting it.
So do you find, is there, like at what point when someone's feeling not their best, do you approach that because of its like upstream nature, I guess? I feel like everybody I talk to that has an issue, they're dealing with these things underneath, and it's like nobody's talking to each other and nobody's going upstream. And it's like, well, thyroid's responsible for all that stuff.
Yeah, I think you're nailing it. I mean, and this is where I can say my gift of getting sick at 15 comes back, because I'm like, I have this weird ability to sort of rise above the noise, and I just watch all these people. Like, even for example, the blowing up of perimenopause conversation is like everywhere.
Is it? And it's like it's not in my. That's not on my feed.
Okay, but anyway, people are talking crazy about it all the time. Oh, it's the cause of everything, but it's the same point. It's like, is it really hormones? Because you can just say it's low testosterone. Low testosterone is a similar discussion. Is it? Is it that you are just somebody who's not producing the right amount of testosterone? Is it because of the thyroid? Like, okay, what about the fact that these guys are all interconnected and it's something even before that? And that's where I think we're just starting to understand when we talk about cell danger because of what we just said, like everything downshifts.
Can you, I've never asked anybody this on the podcast, but can you talk about perimenopause a little bit?
Sure.
What is driving? Is that just from getting older or is there an energetic thing that takes place?
Well, here's the thing, you know, because I don't just accept things. I drove everybody in med school crazy, by the way, because I was like, okay, but why? And they were like, stop asking that. I'm like, I can't. So when I first started studying functional medicine, I said, you know, I'm an internist. I just want to do the gut and thyroid, like hormones are for like urologists and GYNs. Like, I don't want to do that. And the very first talk I went to, I saw the slide of how it looks like this. And I was like, well, crap, I guess I got to learn hormones. You know, this was 20 years ago. So you can't like learn one thing and not understand the rest of it. So again, your points are great. Like it's an interconnected web. And I think what happens is with perimenopause, what all that means is about the 10 years in a woman, the 10 years before menopause, which typically progesterone, which is a hormone that will drop when it's backing up the stress signals, just like testosterone does. So it's really, we can see it in men at any age. It's just a little more pronounced in women, a lot more pronounced, because eventually our estrogen drops too. So women are just more complex. Like when you look at, I was taught once in a hormone class, they had like an old fashioned stereo and one side said female and it had all these knobs on it. And the other side said male and it had an on off switch, you know?
Right. So wait, can we simplify a little bit more? So menopause refers to you're not ovulating anymore. Like, is that menopause, the threshold?
Yeah, refers to the whole system of ovulation, your ability to get pregnant, you're done.
You're done. Perimenopause is the in-between state from when you are regular, ready to procreate. And then there's this big gray area where that's like...
And it can be as long as 10 or 15 years. And you know, there's horrible stories of women that think they're psychotic during that period and they really just need progesterone. So like, this is a real thing. I'm not trying to menopause. I'm not trying to minimize it.
Right. Yeah. 10 to 15 years is a big time.
It can be. And you know, what I found in my practice is if I've addressed these women prior, like I've treated them in their 20s and 30s and into when these symptoms start, if I give them a little bit of progesterone, it's just not a thing.
When you say a little bit, what does that mean? And what is your best form to do that? I'm curious, one, because I've watched my wife tinker a little bit and get different advice. And I've also tinkered with hormones with a little bit of progesterone and pregnenolone and playing around. And I've definitely got some interesting things from it. But like the average person, the average woman that comes in and it seems like they are in the early stage of perimenopause where things aren't, you know, like regular and, you know, they might have some other symptoms that are variable and inconsistent. Like, what do you do? Assuming you want to use progesterone to like try to see if it helps.
Well, it's always the test, don't guess, right? So you want to see what's actually happening because a lot of times if you just go off symptoms, you could be led down the wrong path. So I think, and this is what a problem we see because traditional OBGYNs don't really test hormones, which is just bizarre. So if you start researching it, there's a lot of different ways to test hormones. There's blood, there's saliva, there's urine. And every specialist thinks their way is the better way. Personally, what I do in that scenario is I test all three. Like, depending on what, like, the first time I might do one, then I might do another one and follow up, and then I might do another one again. Because some women clear their hormones out of their blood like this, and the saliva would be more accurate than the blood. So, you know, you need to test for, especially for this perimenopausal time, if a woman's still having periods, even if they're irregular, you want to check the hormones the second half of the cycle. Otherwise, you're like, a lot of times I'll get patients come in and they're like, my GYN checked my labs, And I asked them, and they don't know what day they were on in their cycles. It's like you can't even interpret it.
Well, let's say the hormones are a little low. Okay. So, I mean, from what I understand, having progesterone is low, and you might have estrogen low, and you want to try to intervene. What's like a regular go-to strategy that you have found success with?
So the typical pattern, I'll start out by telling you the typical pattern when I test these people is actually high estrogen and low progesterone. That's where a lot of the perimenopausal symptoms come in, because the combination of stress and being 10 years before menopause preferentially tanks progesterone. So you can look at athletes like gymnasts, for example, and those are girls that should be at the height of health, right? And they don't get their periods. Why? Because they're so stressed with the constant exercise that they can't, they don't have.
And stress makes you convert more to estrogen.
You got it. More cortisol too.
Right.
So like when you steal pregnenolone, it can't go to make progesterone. It goes up the pathway to cortisol and estrogen.
And estrogen, from what I understand, can also be made locally at tissue where it might not even show up. So you could show low serum estrogen, but still have way more of that estrogen than you want, and you wouldn't really know.
And this is where you can get in trouble, right? So that's a lot of times the saliva will pick it up, or maybe the blood may not. So typically what I do is if I see an estrogen dominant, low progesterone, typical perimenopause picture, is I'm looking at the liver because the liver metabolizes estrogen. We also have some supplements that help you safely get rid of that excess estrogen. But we gotta work on both numerator and denominator, right, of the ratio.
Well, and do you work on one first before you interact with the other, or do you just...
I usually do them both.
So what is that, like DIM or calcium deglucurate?
Yeah, all that. Like DIM, calcium deglucurate. We have something called Myomin. It's a Chinese herb. We have something called Estrofactors from Metagenics. It's a really great blend.
Estrofactor?
Estrofactors. That's a good one. So I'll put patients on that if their estrogen's a little bit high, or because you have to be careful too. If you tank their estrogen too quickly, they can get symptomatic from that as well. And then I'll usually give them something to boost their progesterone. Most of these women, if they're pretty uncomfortable, need actual progesterone. So whether it's topical, like we have one that's a dropper, you can put it in your gum line, but that messes up saliva testing. But anyway, you can do topical, you can do drops, you can do an oral pill.
What do you find is like most well tolerated and effective? What are those forms?
If a patient's having a lot of sleep issues, I'll do oral progesterone because it crosses the blood-brain barrier better.
Interesting. At what kind of dose?
100 to 200. It doesn't really move the needle past 200. So like even if they need more, like constantly going up oral doesn't really work. A lot of times I'll add transdermal, or I'll add the drops.
Gotcha.
And then, you know, that. And so with men, they're still like, this isn't just a female thing, right? Yeah, it's more pronounced with women. Typically, when they hit menopause, it regulates because then the estrogen will drop too. And then when the estrogen drops, they may or may not be overly symptomatic. Like if they have,
because it's really about the ratio, the balance.
Yeah, that's where more of the symptoms come in.
Interesting. Well, I didn't expect to talk about perimenopause today.
I didn't either. I don't usually talk about it.
I have an antidote. I had a client. I have a gym, so I have a lot of years experience in the gym environment. And when I was learning, I happened to have this client who was a physician. And when I was like really getting in, nerding out on metabolism several years ago, and I remember, and she had a lot of like kind of low energy symptoms, if you will. And we were talking about diet, and she, along with, you know, many health-minded people, kind of went down like the low-carb route, if you will. And I remember drawing a picture of the mitochondria on the whiteboard and showing her, like reminding her, like, this is how we make energy and such. And it was interesting because, and it's not her words, but the impression I got was, she remembered it all. Like, I had to memorize all those steps on a test, but nobody in medical school taught me how that related to someone feeling good.
Listen, so, I learned more about the mitochondria with my daughter's
right.
So we don't learn anything.
So I encourage her and she was clearly under stress. I encouraged her to have more carbohydrates and really easily digestible carbohydrates. I encouraged her to literally add sugar to her diet.
Good.
And
she felt better.
Like a week or two later, she said after years of not ovulating that all of a sudden she ovulated and she like freaked her out. I was like, well, that's interesting. Didn't see that one coming. Like I was just trying to help you be less stressed at work.
Well, listen, and that's all the knobs that we talked about with the women, but it's the same. There's some of the same stuff with men. It's like we go down these dietary rabbit holes and we see benefits. And I was right there with the ketogenic diet because it was, I heard it would boost mitochondrial biogenesis, make new mitochondria. And so I played with it. It worked pretty well for about 6 weeks. And then that's it. So like I now know, especially if you're a menstruating female who's overly stressed, more than about 4 weeks is probably not a good idea. Teaching metabolic flexibility is a good idea. But being rigid, no, because the cell, our body's smart and it downgrades like its production, just like you said, it made her hormones deprioritized.
Yeah, it's like metabolism's like a thermostat. You know, it's like it'll change. If you like reduce calories, you might lose weight for a minute, but then eventually your body's like, there's less fuel here. We have to take our foot off the gas. So everything like down regulates.
Well, you know where you've probably seen this too, where I've learned a lot about it. It was just with a CGM, a continuous glucose monitor. Mm-hmm. I put it on myself. And my sugars were high in the morning before I did anything. And they actually went down when I ate. So I'm like, okay, we don't understand anything. Like we literally do not understand anything. So something's going on at the mitochondrial level with energy production, right? And for me, I'm really excited now that there's a mitochondrial test.
Well, if you eat a low carb diet, then that'll happen. Because if you're having protein, you're having an insulin response. And insulin's trying to get blood sugar into the cells, so your blood sugar goes down. That's why a lot of people would argue you don't want to have a big serving of protein without adequate carbohydrate so that you could have stable blood sugar. You don't want your blood sugar. Like low blood sugar is way more dangerous than high blood sugar.
I agree. And then what is the cause behind all this? Is it the mitochondrial membrane? Is it, you know, faulty mechanism in the Krebs cycle? Is this, like you said, it's complex. And memorizing all those steps, like, does that have any meaning to anything when we don't understand the science behind it? So about 2 years ago, I was at a biohacking conference and there was a guy there with a mitochondrial test. And I was like, oh, hallelujah. I have been looking for this for my whole life, right? I gotta test my. I know my mitochondria are still not happy. Like I gotta understand this, and so I've been working with that scientist. And the weirdest part, which my life is always divinely led, like I said, is that it's the same scientist as Joe Dispenza.
What's that test? How does that work?
It's called Me Screen. So mitochondrial efficiency is me, and it's a test people can actually do at home. I can get you a link for it, but you can do it at home with a finger stick, although it does require a fair amount of blood. So patients kind of complain they're milking their finger. And then it shows up with a score. And what's really cool about it is it's dynamic. I mean, look, some people say it's not an accurate test. Is there going to be something better eventually? Hopefully. But what I like about it is it's testing the mitochondria in a like dynamic, like in this moment, it goes as a dried blood spot to a lab in San Diego. And then they kind of wake it up again and give it stress and see how well the body can handle it. So it's really good for just about anybody, but especially athletes with you at the gym. It's telling us, do we think the membranes are still sick and you need lipid repair? Or is it your nervous system? Or, you know, could it be of a nutritional issue? Because the first time I ever did it, and they're still working out the details, like the test.
Yeah, I wonder how good that stuff is. In fact, one of our sponsors, True Diagnostic, I give them a shout out here. I mean, they have a test like that, and I've done a few times, and it's interesting. I just don't know. Like, I don't know what's true. Like, it's a few drops of blood. Like, are you really getting? Oh, there's so much information, and I'm like,
well,
is that real?
Is the age, you know, looking at your biological.
Well, they have a full thing now. So Like, I think there's a lot of companies doing this, and there's a lot of information. I assume they're using similar strategies to how to get it. And
sure. And I think
I think as you get more reps of it and see trends and like and get more data, it's probably more useful than like just getting it once and then making a long-term decision over it.
All the old testing we had, which is still good stuff, like the NutriEval, like big panels in functional medicine, they're assessing metabolism and mitochondrial function based on like A goes to B requires C as the cofactors. And if you see the amount of A is higher, it's not making it to B, there must be a problem with C, right? That's like how they're judging if you have an issue with different vitamin levels or cofactors. Whereas these tests are a little bit more in the moment. So I think the answer is that, again, that principle number three, like things are evolving. We don't fully understand the body, and we definitely are seeing tech that's getting better by the minute, which is exciting. So the answer of what do you trust? I think you nailed it. Like, watch your own trend.
Right. So, and relate it to how you feel.
And related to how you feel. Yeah.
Which we get a little disconnected. And I think some of the times the lab work can really disconnect from that. I mean, I remember even like I got a buddy that harps on me about like tracking food, like more detailed. And I've tracked food periodically for like a few days. But I feel like it actually – and I understand where he's coming from. I understand the value. And also, and for me personally – I feel like I get so focused on, well, I need to have 50 more grams of protein before I go to bed or whatever. It's like I'm not even listening to what my body's asking, and that's not good. And I feel like that can happen with the blood work when we get reliant on it. And like I've seen it with thyroid. Like I have family members that have been trying to figure out the thyroid puzzle forever with practitioners that are just treating blood values so much. And I just don't think the blood value is as relevant as we think it is.
Again, you're incredibly smart. Like you're nailing it. This is what my book's about. So I have a book coming out in December called The Unwritten Prescription, and it's talking about all this stuff, like how not just blood, but I believe all of the biohacks, like, and the trackers do the same thing. So like everyone's so obsessed with the exact amount of sleep, the exact amount of this, the exact amount of that. They're stuck in comparison. It becomes preachy. Like if you don't hit what everybody's saying you need to hit, you're a bad person who hasn't met their goal.
You're a bad biohacker.
Exactly. Bad little biohacker.
You got a C- in biohacking this week.
Go to your room. Go to your room and measure more parameters. So it's like I have a love-hate relationship with my Oura ring, for example. So like I'll put it on and just, and to your point, if I feel like I slept and it's telling me I didn't, I'm like, that's annoying. Or if I worked out and it's not picking it up, like I don't need that extra spillage of energy when I can just talk to my body directly. So I think restoring intuition and connection to your how you feel in all these cases, whether it's blood work or other measurement tools, is imperative.
Can I circle back just a little bit? Because my mind has been on these things over the last, I would say, year or two. And I've talked to some doctors about it, and a lot of them I feel like aren't even well equipped to answer. But have you ever found somebody, let's say somebody that is perimenopause or somebody that has a clear hormonal, let's just say, I don't want to call it a problem, but like there's room for improvement in the hormonal profile. Have you ever been able to just give thyroid to the point where you have either thyroid markers or a felt experience of the effect of the thyroid, whether it be body temperature or whatever it is, or pulse or whatever you're measuring, and that in itself kind of clean up the hormonal profile just by getting the thyroid right?
Yeah. When I teach, I actually have this analogy of a stool that has 3 to 4 legs, depending on if I'm including the mitochondria, but it's thyroid, it's hormones, it's adrenals, and it's the mitochondria. And if what I teach patients is if one of the legs isn't holding up its end of the deal, the rest burn out faster. So to your point, let's say the thyroid's really off and somebody's testosterone's low-ish, right? It might be in the 400s and we want it 800. If we restore that stool, usually it's the adrenals because they're pulling everything down. So you need adrenal, mitochondrial support. But you're right. If you can treat the thyroid, it could correct the hormonal dysfunction because they're backing each other up.
And you see, have you seen that where somebody takes T3 or a combo T4, T3, and then the thyroid and the testosterone just comes on up?
It usually requires more than just the thyroid.
Gotcha.
It usually requires adrenal support and calming the nervous system out of stress.
What about on the female side? Is it any different? Like if somebody is perimenopause and they haven't dialed in their thyroid, do you think dialing in the thyroid can just kind of correct the hormonal stuff?
I would say similar, but like in a lot of cases, we need the support of both for a little while and then we can see it come.
What's an example of adrenal support in your practice?
So I will use everything from, first, I like to know if you're in overproduction. So like some people are stressed 24/7, they're overproducing cortisol, which is, you know, waking them up at night and increasing blood sugar, and they crash in the afternoon and they can't sustain. They're like living off of adrenaline. Right. Then you need adaptogens like ashwagandha. There's a ton of different adaptogenic herbs, which basically just means there's actually smart herbs out there, which is wild that if you're tired, they pick you up. And if you're wired, they calm you down.
Yeah, that's interesting. Have you ever used carbohydrate to address the cortisol?
Yes. I will tell patients like, hey, just like you did, like, I think you need some carbs at night before you go to bed. Just keep waking up at 3 a.m. Like, let's try to see if that doesn't help.
Yeah, I think there's a reason people like ice cream. It's like it gives you a slow drip of sugar through the night.
It helps you do it with fat because it's got the fat with it.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Like I usually will tell people, like I learned this early on from when I studied adrenals, was like a bit of like nut butter and celery just because you're getting like
nut butter. I'm talking about ice cream. You're talking about nut butter and celery? I'd much rather have ice cream, Lisa.
Sounds a lot better.
I would never pass over ice cream to get nut butter and celery. But
exactly.
I
hear you. But you know, some people are weird about their sugar consumption. But the point's the same.
But that's
right?
The thing. Like cortisol, sugar opposes cortisol. You know.
Yeah, and fat mixed with the carb
slow it down.
Slow it down.
Yeah.
So I agree with you, and I think it's like this is just a complex web that the reason people don't talk about it is because it's annoying to hit all these things, right? You have to have a deeper understanding of all of them. You can't just hone in on one, and it's hard to explain to a patient.
Have you ever used pregnenolone by itself?
Yeah,
either like personally or with a patient.
Well, and you said with adrenals, like what else there is besides the adaptogenic herbs? Sometimes we'll use pregnenolone. Sometimes we'll use glandulars. So what those are is basically animal adrenal. It's when you are really tanked. Sometimes that's the only thing that'll pick
you
up.
So that's to bring you up. So that's if somebody's like doesn't have enough cortisol or something.
Well, what we'll see, and my analogy I use that I really like is a townhouse. Like you don't want to be in the townhouse at all, but you're either in the basement, the ground floor, or the penthouse. And the penthouse feels really good for a little bit because you can stay up all night. You can do all this operating off of adrenaline, but you crash. So that's where you need the adaptogenic herbs. The ground floor is where you're a little bit of both. And that's where most people hang out. Like they're tanked in the morning and then they get wired at night. It's sort of a backwards curve, which, by the way, I think has a lot to do with light signaling and the inability to be outside. And then there's the basement where you're just toast. So typically, I'll use a stronger glandular for the basement. If patients are in the ground floor, we may use a lighter glandular in the morning, but then we may have adaptogenic herbs later in the day to help them sleep. And then if they're in the penthouse, they use the adaptogenic herbs. And then pregnenolone, you know, that you need to test the level because it's...
Or
it's,
else it, what?
Yeah.
Do you?
I mean, you can try it.
What's the risk?
I mean, it can turn into, like, if you do it, it can turn into progesterone. It can, like, kind of imbalance the hormones a little bit.
Isn't that what it does first, essentially? Like, why would that be bad? That's if you're
and
stressed.
Most people, it's not.
Yeah.
Most people, it's not bad.
I'm intrigued by it because I feel like I always just want to go as upstream as possible and trust the inner wisdom of the body to know what to do with. Like, ideally, you eat cholesterol, and if things are, and you have the right environment and signaling, then you make pregnenolone, and they make all those other things with it. So it's like, well, maybe my body's having trouble like making enough or whatever. So I'm just going to give it some and see what it does with it. And in my experience, pregnenolone and sugar have been the two most like anti-stress compounds that I've found to work with. Not only that, I mean, my experience, I'll be real short with this and we'll wrap this up. My experience with pregnenolone was so weird that it was almost like life before the first dose and life after. Like, I remember I remember where I was like 40 minutes after I took the first dose of pregnenolone. And it felt like a multi-decade state of stress had like a shift.
I'm going to take it tonight.
It was so weird. And I was like, what just happened? Like the whole world was different to me. And now I just use it anytime I'm stressed. And it's like pretty reliable. Like I kind of wish I could go back to re-experience this like monumental moment. Because when I feel it work now, it works, but it's not like so powerful as the first time.
Well, you're probably much more balanced now.
It's almost like something was recalibrated. Like somebody hit a button and it like recalibrated. And then I was like, had a new baseline or homeostasis. It was fascinating to me.
I mean, that's probably the HPA axis, because when you're stressed for so long, your cortisol is really high. It affects your hypothalamus, your pituitary. So...
Yeah, I have a history of a lot of stressful things. So
yeah,
I think like the system was kind of broken, and then it just like reset the system.
I love it. I mean, that's great. And I think again, trusting the wisdom of this vessel, which is wise, instead of overriding things. So yeah, trying it even for just a week or two, but you should still check the level just because you can.
Yeah, I have checked the levels, and they've always just seemed fine, and they haven't gone up. Like, there's no sign of a problem from me taking it. It's been an interesting experiment, but it's like, I don't know, like $20 gets you, I don't know, a 3-year supply. I mean, it's virtually free.
Which is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Anyway.
Well, down there it's at the base of the tree. Like, I've got a hormone tree that I teach with patients, right? And it's like, you've got cholesterol and you've got pregnenolone. It's the base. And then it turns into everybody else.
Oh, I've always looked at it top down. I look at it as it's the top and then everything comes down. Same idea. Lisa, this has been great. Spectra Wellness Solutions. Where is it? How do people, if people want to explore how your system can help them, what do they do?
So I have my book coming out this year, Unwritten Prescription. So stay tuned for that. You can find me on Dr. Lisa Coach on Facebook and Instagram. Spectra Wellness is our destination clinic in Tampa. So we do have places and visits and things set up where people can come in and we can start them on their journey. So they come in even twice a year for 3 nights or something. We can really get you going. We can individualize your process. So we're excited about that. We just moved into this new space 3-4 weeks ago. So I've been waiting. Yeah, I've been waiting for the ability to offer these types of visits where you can see our naturopath and get muscle tests. You can see my upper cervical chiro. You can do all of our performance hacks because we have hyperbaric and, you know, flow press. So we have a lot of different great interventions. And I'm constantly, because I, to this day, don't stop asking why, I'm constantly trying to understand more about the cell membrane and cell danger and like how do we assess athletes, for example, that think they're doing amazing things, but nobody's ever looked at their cell. So I'd love to have any of your listeners come hang out with us for a few days.
That sounds like great. It's nice to be able to access all those things in one place. Well, congrats on the new setup, and I wish you luck with it, and I hope our paths cross again sometime. For the listeners, always grateful for your listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Please leave a comment if something's on your mind. And Lisa, thanks for sharing your healing story with us. Like I said, I'm always, I don't know, inspired by a good healing story, and sounds like you got a good one there. So
yeah, it's an ongoing one, just like you.
Right. Well, it's been great to connect with you, and I appreciate you guys reaching out. And I look forward to your book. Give me a message when it comes out, and we'll let the audience know.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Take care, everybody. Hope you have a great day.
Thank you.